And welcome back to another edition of Sideline Sessions with Wesley Sykes. I am, of course, Wesley Sykes, the managing editor of Coach and Athletic Director, training, conditioning, and winning hoops brands for Great American Media Services. And you can listen to all of our previous episodes anywhere you can access podcasts, as well as any of our websites, coachad.com, training-conditioning.com, and winninghoops.com. And be sure to follow our brands on Twitter, at coach_AD, at train condition, and at winning hoops. And as always, myself, if you like, at Wesley Sykes _. And today we welcome to the program District Athletic Director of Fountain Fort Carson High School in Colorado Springs, Colorado, Jared Felice. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us today. Jared, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Wesley, for having me. I'm very honored to, just talk about my side of the industry regarding sports and, you know, kind of how things continue to evolve and trend within our industry.
Awesome. And I'm happy to hear about it. And I think this kind of opens up, rather open-endedly. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. What inspired you to get into the athletic administration industry? And what do you do right now?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm the district athletic director and high school athletic director at Fountain Fort Carson School District 8. And I've been in this position going on my fifth year now. So I am a Colorado Springs native, born and raised, graduated from Mesa Ridge High School in 2001. And I played I played high school football, a little bit of college football until I was injured, and got into teaching and coaching at Fountain Fort Carson at the high school. So I've been there 14 years now in total. So I taught social studies and I coached football as a dean of students. I went to another district for a short time for 2 years to kind of get my AD feet wet. And, mm-hmm. I was kind of recruited into that job by a family friend that I know. And it was a great learning experience. And then in 2017, I had the opportunity to come back and serve this district, which has been just really incredible opportunity for me. So it's really been wonderful for me and my family, and I certainly enjoy it.
Yeah, I find that pretty interesting that you said you were kind of born and raised in the area that you're currently serving right now. Just off the bat, what are some of the advantages, disadvantages of maybe working within your community, and then again having that experience maybe outside of your community as well? So what are some of those things that brought about that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Being from the area, and I lived about 10 minutes away from where I currently work. Mm-hmm. And I do now, as when I was raised. And our community is about my high school that I'm at is about 70-75% military. And mm-hmm. so that provides a whole different set of challenges that is very unique to Colorado and largely the country. And so we have a lot of mobility. So being from the area and being raised in that environment in many respects, it really helps with your perspective on what change is, on how there's going to be a lot of kids in and out of the door. So a different set of stakeholders that we're able to learn from, and, it really creates some incredible diversity and programming opportunities from a school and athletic perspective.
And of course you mentioned your ties to the school and just being within there in the coaching and teaching ranks for since 2006 in various roles. But when you took over the FFC athletic program, what did you kind of envision? How did you want to maybe put your stamp onto that program and to the position?
Yeah. So when I interviewed, a big part was I wanted to establish a really streamlined, affirmed strength and conditioning program. Mm-hmm. To really program our kids across the board, regardless of what sport it is. And that starts with a renovated weight room, which we're really proud of and get a lot of work out of it. We have two strength coaches. We have a head and an assistant, and they program all three seasons as well as in the summer. So that was a big visionary piece for me that we have running. And it's truly been incredible. We have some coaches that they really make it happen. And I couldn't be prouder of that. Another big part of what I envisioned was creating more opportunities for coaching education. Mm-hmm. There's clinics all over the country and they do a great job, but to do something in-house. So I host a district annual coaches clinic that requires all middle and high school coaches to attend. And we have speakers and allow coaches to share kind of tools of the trade that really work for them. And it's gone great, you know, and we're hosting it again this July 30th, and it's going to, I'm really looking forward to it. And so coaching education, strength and conditioning, you know, that really lends into another big priority of mine, which is athlete development. So, you know, being able to provide our kids with the most current knowledge, tools, training possible, so they can compete at a high level, is really important to what we do in our program. And so those are really kind of the key elements of what I envision coming in and going into the fifth year now. You know, you really kind of fine tune and try to move things forward. And I have very supportive leadership above me. So that really couldn't be done without their support, which I'm really grateful for.
Now, from the sounds of it, Fountain Fort Carson sounds like a regional school. How big is your school, you know, student body wise? And then how big is your athletic department, you know, student athletes?
Yeah, so great question. So, you know, we have the military turnover a bit, but so we fluctuate. And so, you know, when I first started in 2006, we had about 1,200 kids, and now we're trending at about 1,900. Mm-hmm. So that can go up and down a little bit depending on what the federal government's doing. And, you know, our district's built for that, and we have great resources to support those changes. You know, our athletic department is great size. We're a 5A classification. We have three levels of programming across the vast majority of sports, all team sports, which has been wonderful. And that's a big priority of mine, that we're keeping three levels of football and basketball. And that ranges from freshman to senior. And we're able to get the most out of any opportunity there in size. But, you know, our athletes, we try to push multi-sport participation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have about 700 athletes in total out of that grouping. And just like our total enrollment, it can go up or down, but participation's increased about 20% total since I started here in 2017. And, you know, we've been able to hire some great coaches that have really been the pillar of that growth.
And I think a big part of that growth has to be, you know, in some sense, the facilities and everything around you. You mentioned updating your strength and conditioning facility and everything along those lines. But, you know, I think part of the reason why we were connected originally was your involvement in our inaugural facilities week, where we were connecting, you know, ADs on a personal one-on-one level with suppliers to help meet their, you know, facility needs through their new projects. And, you know, I got to see some of the talk to you about some of the things that you have in the pipeline at Fountain Fort Carson. And how much does that work as maybe in more or less of terms of recruiting aspect to getting kids into the athletic program?
Well, you know, we have wonderful facilities, and it's really more about doing the best for what we can for the kids that we have and the kids coming to us from the military. So 98% of our transfers are military students. You know, recruiting is not allowed within our state whatsoever. But as far as getting kids excited and coaches giving them the resources to be successful and really just give them an enhanced experience of what high school athletics is all about. You know, we have wonderful facilities, whether it's our football track stadium, our baseball fields. You know, we're going to break ground on an arena very soon, later this year, which we're incredibly excited about. And it's really just about programming as much as we can through facilities for our kids and our coaches so they can have the highest level of success within our controllable means.
Yeah, I should have put with an audio podcast, you can't really use the air quotes around recruiting there. I'm not trying to stir the pot or get you in trouble in Colorado or anything like that. But what I did find interesting about, again, the kind of the uniqueness of your school is the proximity to the military bases and that military influx. You know, a little background about myself. I grew up in, born Massachusetts, which is a big, Otis Cape Cod Air Force Base. Massachusetts. In fact, I think 9/11, they were the closest Air Force base to scramble jets in response after those terrorist attacks, and tons of schools up on that air base. And I just find that really interesting about, again, that transfer rate, that kind of in and out fluctuation of student athletes in there. But also you know, the melting pot that it kind of brings in to your community about the wide range of athletes with diverse backgrounds and different learning experiences under different coaches in parts of the country, right? So I thought, you know, for the local high school, when they had a huge influx of military students when that base was open, it really brought the athletic program to another level.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've got kids that are very resilient. And I think that's a word that I like to use when it describes mm-hmm. our kids, because they're so used to change and they've been in and out of schools through, you know, PCS orders, which are permanent change of station for our members of the U.S. Army, which is what our school's affiliated with at Fort Carson. And so they're very resilient in what they're able to do and how they adjust to change. And it builds a great community within the school. Kids are very accepting of one another and they're used to new kids coming in. So, you know, having and being a new kid in a school, our school's probably the best for that. And it's really built for that.
And it's interesting too, because it's almost, yeah, you know, I don't want to make this, you know, straight comparison, but it's like a college atmosphere in that sense where you do, or, you know, a private school where you're forced to kind of introduce to new kids from different backgrounds and everything. It's not necessarily the homogenized community that you grew up with in elementary school to middle school to the high school level there. So I think it's a great exposure from a social level, not even just from a, you know, athletic level.
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's incredibly diverse, which brings a lot of positivity to what we're able to do in building that strong school culture. You know, we have very aggressive programming in athletics and activities about getting kids engaged. And, you know, it does create it. I mean, our school really is a melting pot. We get kids from all over the country and sometimes internationally, depending on if their parents have been overseas. And, you know, we're really built on what an American school should look like. Mm-hmm. You know, in so much the sense of the word.
And again, I just find that so interesting, you know, with my background there. So I think I'm not sure at what point I was off at college at this point, but the Air Force Base in my hometown had closed down to the, you know, public at this point. I think it turned into a jail. I think I just read that it might get converted into a Space Force base now at this point. So, but it's interesting. I think they took in a lot of displaced people after Hurricane Katrina. And again, you saw a lot of great influx of athletes. And shortly after that point, you can almost mark after that air base closed down when the athletic program started to dip, both in, you know, vying for state championships and just numbers. And it was because it's a huge part of the town. Probably half the town is, you know, land-wise is devoted to that air base.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Fort Carson Army base is such a key influence and cog within just the Colorado Springs area. And, you know, mm-hmm. Fountain's just basically a suburb of that. And so it plays such a role, and thus a role on our school and our district and just creating a culture for the city of Fountain and Colorado Springs alike. And what the military does is going to have a direct influence and impact on what happens within the city, within El Paso County itself.
Now, so I understand you wear a couple different hats outside of your athletic director role here. So I understand you're pretty involved at the state level, serving on the CHSAA Tournament Finance Committee, as well as the Sportsmanship Committee, and a few others as well. Why do you think it's beneficial to maybe your school and program to be involved in these, you know, state and regional committees? And then, you know, maybe as a follow-up, how can it help you from a personal networking standpoint?
Yeah. So, you know, I like serving on those committees. A lot of ADs try to get into the sport committees like baseball, mm-hmm. football, basketball. I really have an interest in, of course, those sports. It's what I do. But, you know, those committees, the business side of athletic administration is one where I feel like you can learn a lot about what our job is. You know, as athletic directors, I like to think that, you know, we kind of like an iceberg. You know, you see a little bit of what's on top of the surface. You know, people think, oh, you know, you as an AD, you're scheduling and, you know, working with coaches, but there's so much more beneath the surface on the business side of things, on networking and programming and working with ADs. And it's a true base of camaraderie. And so, you know, being involved in those things really foremost helps provide a voice for my school and district, you know, mm-hmm. that being, you know, we're about an hour and 20 minutes south of Denver, and we're such a unique school and district that it's really hard to understand the dynamics of that and how we're impacted federally and nationally, unless you live and work in it. And so providing a voice at the state level and at the local level, and then I'm on a national committee too. And, you know, just being able to have that little bit of voice opportunity is what's most important and why I try to get myself involved. And, you know, it's great to just keep learning too. And, and that's another chief reason is what can I learn from others that is going to make me better at my job? And that's what I truly care about is what can I do to get better and how can we really promote and support Found Fort Carson High School and District.
I love that comparison to the tip of the iceberg thing, because, you know, just a little peek behind the curtain in our upcoming issue of Coach and Athletic Director in the editor's letter here. It was I kind of penned it. Thank you for making it look easy, because as a sports reporter on the high school level prior to this job, I would work, you know, alongside athletic directors. I would talk to them, and from, you know, my naive perspective, it was, you know, running a scoreboard during the game, putting a schedule together, you know, making sure the events are lined up, you know, those sort of things. And I was like, that seems like a fun job, you know, if you like sports and sports adjacent. And then it wasn't until, you know, maybe a year or two into that job, and then rolling into this one, where I really got to see that peek behind the curtain. And it was, it wasn't that the job looked easy. It was that the athletic directors I was around just kind of made it look easy and fun. And I think that was a testament to those, you know, that I worked with. But I love that tip of the iceberg comparison, almost like a duck on the pond, right? You see the duck going across and it's nice and smooth, but you don't necessarily see the legs kicking underneath to make them go, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so much of that is because of, you know, there's one AD per school. And so, like, I have strong bonds with the ADs within my league and within the state and the city and whatnot, because we kind of have to rely on each other in many ways, you know, because we know what each one of us is going through, especially getting through this school year with COVID-19, sure. You know, and how do we level and align with best practices? And, you know, we know where our programs are and what we can do, which is so unique in terms of the educational field as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And as we wrap up here, if I like to close things out with one big question, knowing what you know now about yourself, what is one thing you would like to tell your younger self about the athletic and administration industry?
Yeah, so, you know, I plan on being in this role for the rest of my career. So I've been in education 16 total years, so got a little bit ways to go still. But, you know, I've learned so much in this job and continue to. You know, I think what's really important for ADs or those looking to get into it, and what I would look back and tell myself, is to establish a really healthy work-life balance. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a wife and three sons, and it's important to maintain that. And being an AD can be difficult because there are a lot of hours that are worked past, you know, 3 p.m. That's where a bulk of the job comes into. And right. You know, I do about, on average, pre-COVID, I did about 100 event supervisions a year, which can be a lot, you know. And just being able to kind of teach myself earlier of maintaining or establishing that work-life balance is important. It's important for the mental health piece, physical, kind of mitigating against burnout. The AD profession has a high burnout rate. It's about 2.5 to 3 years.
Wow.
And then people burn out of it. And a lot of that's because of the hours, which can be difficult. It's a very public job. You know, it's one of the few jobs where your program or what you oversee is going to be in the paper or the news every day. And that could be from a challenging situation to just a simple box score of a football game. You know, it could be a range of issues. So it can be stressful. It does get better, gets easier as years go on, but that work-life balance is really integral to being able to keep pushing forward in the job.
Yeah, that's, you know, I would have guessed that the burnout rate would have been high, but that you know, doesn't surprise, but that number is a little bit surprising. What do people tend to go into afterwards? Do you know?
You know, a lot of, from what I've seen, is ADs, once they start to feel that burnout, a lot of them just try to venture into other positions within administration. So that could be, you know, assistant principals or principal, or district level positions. You know, I'm really blessed in my job as a district AD. I'm a director at the district level, and all I do is athletics, which is wonderful. And it's my employers are, they're great about understanding, you know, how important it is to stay focused on this one specific job. And I'm not pulled in a thousand other directions. And that really helps me, you know, and able to really focus on what I'm currently doing in my role.
All right. I love it. And Jared, thank you so much for your time. Before we let you go, I like to do this with all my guests here. This is a segment called Five Questions that have nothing to do with sports, but a little different here today because, you know, as I was looking on your LinkedIn page, I found a couple interesting things. So it's not five questions, but maybe just some open-ended things. So I understand you teach a counterterrorism course at CSU Pueblo. Is that correct?
That's correct, which is very unique. A lot of people are very surprised by that. You know, when I was a teacher,
I'm fascinated.
And I still do that through the Center for Homeland Security on a small online level now. But that's another aspect that or another content that I've really enjoyed. And I keep doing that. And it's always relevant. So I don't know how much more longer I'll do it, but I've been doing that some time now.
Well, what sparked this avenue in your life? And again, tell us a little bit about the course, if you can. Give us an elevator pitch for it.
Yeah, sure. So, I've been working with them for a while. And, it was just a content interest, you know, being I was a little freshman during 9/11. And then I just became more and more interested in this field. And then I went and got academically trained through a couple different schools. And you know, the intelligence community is very specialized, obviously, and my degrees are specialized in that field. And I just kind of had an opportunity through some individuals like Dr. Steve Label, who's down there, and, you know, hooked me up with a job. And it's adjunct, so it's part time. And I've been able to do that. And so it's really just more of an interest than anything. And then knowing the right individuals to be able to get me into that. But a lot of the courses are really they're introductory level, but more so in tradecraft. My specialization is in decentralized homegrown extremist groups. So those that are typically without a traditional leader. And so that's kind of what I focus on within those courses.
Jeez, you said, it's not going anywhere anytime. I'm sure you just have a whole bunch of information as time goes on here, which is interesting and also, I guess, a little sad commentary on the state of the world as well.
Right.
Have you been keeping up with these ransomware stories involving the Colonial Pipeline and so like meat factories and things like that? And would that kind of fall into counterterrorism, you would think, or terrorism?
You know, it really does. I mean, there's always something happening. And so the course content is able to stay relevant, you know, and there's always something new to add into it. And so depending on what's occurring within the world, whether it's foreign, domestic, you know, I'm able to apply and insert some of that content into mostly discussion points, reflective papers, assessments, things of that nature. Really just kind of depends on what it is. I try to stay away from the cybersecurity aspect a little bit. That's pretty in depth in a completely different field. It does relate, but it's a bit of a different animal in terms of what I actually teach and do.
Because it's amazing, I hear that stuff and as a headline, the Colonial Pipeline thing like that, and then you don't really think it comes, really close to your doorstep. But again, I live on Cape Cod, and the Steamship Authority, which is the main artery, I would guess, for Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard to mainland Cape Cod, was recently, hit with ransomware. And there was some sort of, delays. It just really caused some problems in ticketing and delays and the, boat times and arrivals and things like that. But it really hit me that, if that were to happen on a local level, I mean, again, that's the mainline artery, the cheapest and most economical way to get the most people back and forth from the island and supplies and things like that. So I can only imagine if that were to shut down, that, again, your wheels kind of start turning on the what if category.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, those instances on the tech side, that's the new warfare. And so that's what's going to impact people on a grand scale. And so that is definitely a priority within even the education aspect of cybersecurity, counterterrorism, just national security studies in general, because that's what people see and that's what they can feel on a daily level impact.
All right. Last question here. And this might not be within your wheelhouse here, but Given that this other hat that you do wear, I'm interested in your opinion on the upcoming UFO Pentagon report that's supposed to be released at some point this month. And I think, you know, some leaks have started to kind of drips and drabs have kind of come out there. But again, if this isn't, UFO or alien technology or anything, it brings up a good question of whose technology is it, right?
No, it absolutely does. There's a lot of merit to those claims, I believe. You know, I think it's interesting. I'm going to definitely tune into that congressional hearing. It just sparks interest, you know, of the unknown. And I've been following that too. And I definitely think that there's some things there for sure. And the public has a right and interest to know more about it. And we'll see kind of what it leads to. I mean, you know, there's special projects going on all the time. So part of me wouldn't be surprised if it's something that's earthly, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's something beyond our scope of understanding or even imagination.
Yeah, because I mean, some of these accounts from, you know, these top military officials or you know, military pilots, right, who work with this expert technology and say that these are going like, you know, from five feet above land to 50,000, like a, you know, quick blink of an eye almost, and things that they haven't seen done on a technological basis. And again, my mind starts to wonder, like, oh geez, like I almost hope that it's alien at this point.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. I mean, especially since so much of this information and data has come out in the last year. I mean, probably more now than we've ever seen, at least to my knowledge. And so I kind of wouldn't be surprised from what's happened in 2020 and now in 2021, I almost wouldn't be surprised if anything. Certainly this issue above all, almost.
Well, we'll be keeping our eyes peeled here for that. But Jared, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. I think you successfully survived. I don't know if that was five questions, but a little different spin on five questions that have nothing to do with sports.
Yeah, no, that's great. I appreciate it. That's awesome. I like to get off and talk about these things as well.
Well, I think maybe another time we can schedule another podcast. Maybe we can just talk all about counterterrorism and maybe go 2 hours over the course of that.
Happy to.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would too, actually. But in the meantime, where can the people get in touch with you or Fountain Fort Carson on social media?
Yeah, so I run the FFCHS Athletics Twitter account. And, you know, we have about 900 followers on that, and I try to keep it as current and updated as possible to showcase our kids and what we're doing and celebrate them and our coaches. And it's the same handle for Instagram as well. So those are really the two primary social media spots where, we try to, you know, meet kids with where they're at because that's what they're using, you know. So The FFCHS Athletics on Twitter, and it's the same exact handle for the Instagram account as well.
Well, I can tell you that if a local reporter hasn't thanked you for your Twitter updates, I will thank them for you. As a former local reporter, that was huge for me covering multiple teams and multiple sports on a given day. So just a little tip of the cap for there. Once again, you can follow all of our brands on Twitter, at @coach_AD, at Train Condition, at Winning Hoops. And then as always, myself, if you like, at @WesleySykes_. And you want to be following those accounts to get a first look at who our next guest will be for our 20th episode, which will release, I believe, in the first month of July, if my schedule is correct here. But until then, sports fans, I'm Wesley Sykes, and thank you for listening to Sideline Sessions, and thank you, Jared.
Yeah, thank you, Wesley. Happy to be on.